Welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Brinson, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Without giving notice to tribes, water quality advocates, citizens, or fishing families, the EPA announced plans to revoke its own 2016 rule that ensures protective standards for Washington State citizens. If finalized, the proposed rule would pave the way for polluters to dump greatly increased amounts of toxic pollution into state waters, threatening communities, salmon, and orcas that rely on clean water to thrive. The EPA memo, unexpectedly discovered by a Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission staff member, indicates a return to a much weaker, unprotective standard that will not protect tribes and other consumers of fish caught in Washington's waters. In the meantime, Trump has issued an executive order that aims to prevent states from blocking pipelines and other infrastructure by using authority granted to them under the Clean Water Act. Today, we talk with Columbia Riverkeepers Legal and Program Director Lauren Goldberg and Ali Rosenbluth with Rogue Climate about how these actions constitute a direct attack on the Pacific Northwest efforts to decarbonize and protect the environment. Lauren and Ali, welcome back to Locus Focus.
Good morning. Thank you.
Hi, Barbara.
Good to hear you both.
Hi, Barbara. Thanks for having us.
Hi. Well, I want to start with you, Lauren. This bit that I just read sort of emphasizes Washington as opposed to Oregon. So I wondered, why is it that this EPA's efforts to roll back this rule actually have more of an impact on Washington state waters than they do on Oregon waters?
That's because the states have the ability to step in and protect people that consume locally caught fish, rely on clean water when the federal government doesn't do its job. And fortunately, in the state of Oregon, due in large part to leadership from the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation and other tribes throughout Oregon, back, about 8 years ago, the state of Oregon took a historic step when it decided to protect the vast majority of people that eat locally caught fish. Now, unfortunately, there was not the political will in Washington state to protect people that eat locally caught fish. And that's why, under the Obama administration, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency had to step in, where the state wasn't doing its job to protect people from cancer and other threats posed by toxic pollution in our waters. And the Obama administration, EPA, stepped in and told the state of Washington, this is the floor, this is the minimum amount of toxic pollution. And now the Trump administration has its eye on rolling that back and going back to a situation where there were industry along the Columbia River, Puget Sound, throughout the state will be able to pump into our rivers toxic pollution that, under the Obama administration, the EPA said was not safe for people that consume locally caught fish.
So, of course, in Oregon, even though we might have our own state protections, it's not going to help us if in Washington they're pumping all kinds of toxins into the Columbia River, which separates the states along at least half of our northern and southern borders.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And Ali, I want to bring you in now to talk about this other issue that happened a little bit after this EPA rollback, and that's an executive order that Trump signed, about 2 weeks ago, that would try to override states' abilities to stop pipelines and other nasty fossil fuel infrastructure. That's a big concern for you down in Southern Oregon. Let's talk just a little bit about what you're fighting down there and why, if Trump's executive order holds, it could really undermine the efforts that you're trying to do right now to protect Oregon.
Yeah, so in Southern Oregon, we are facing a proposed fracked gas pipeline, an LNG export terminal called Jordan Cove. This project crosses around waterways around 500 times. It would be the largest source of climate pollution in the state of Oregon if it's built. It impacts cultural resources and traditional territories of many tribes. In general, is just a really, really bad step for our communities. So even though this project does have to go under federal review, there are some state permits, including this Clean Water Act permit, the 401, that have stopped pipelines even when the federal government approves them. So these executive orders that Trump released a few weeks ago are really a threat to our state's rights to protect our community's clean water and also our community's safety from pipelines like the Pacific Connector pipeline.
So I sort of see like two opposite ends coming and hitting each other with these two different proposals, the EPA proposal and Trump's executive order. Because on the one hand, the EPA rule change would actually impede the federal government from protecting states from themselves, whereas Trump's executive order would prohibit states from protecting themselves from the federal government. So I wanted you to both kind of address what does that mean and how do these two actions sort of interact with each other?
Yeah, no, that's a really interesting way to put it. And I think, you know, when you can hold these two actions up together, what they say is really telling of what we're seeing across the nation with Trump's policies toward favoring corporate interests and financial interests over people's health, over clean water, in general, over our environment. And that's, you know, no surprise. this is what we were expecting when he came into office. And now the question is, when we turn to our local leaders, the governor in Oregon, the governor in Washington, the heads of our, you know, state agencies, local governments like port authorities or our city elected officials, the question really comes down to how are they going to stand up for our health? How are they going to stand up for clean water when we have this not only a vacuum of protection coming from Washington, D.C., but a pointed effort to unravel decades of public health and environmental protections?
Well, I'm wondering if the EPA rule goes into effect and it rolls back these protections, are there any efforts in Washington state to try to follow what Oregon did and create their own statewide protections for clean water?
Well, currently there are not, because that question was settled by EPA when EPA stepped in, because there wasn't the political will in Washington state to protect people's health. And the reason there wasn't that political will is in large part because of very, very powerful corporate interests in Washington state, like Boeing, that really were prioritizing their bottom line over public health and were able to convince elected officials to follow suit. And so, that the Obama rule went into effect in 2016. It's 2019 now, and I think it's a very fair question. Will Governor Inslee, will the Washington Department of Ecology, will other elected officials in Washington that have stood up to the Trump administration's efforts to roll back clean water protections, public health protections, and beyond, will they do the right thing and step in and protect people's health?
Well, that's a good question.
An open question.
Yeah, actually, I just saw Governor Jay Inslee on the Bill Maher show again this weekend, and I get very frustrated when I see him on Bill Maher touting his great credentials as the green candidate for president now and how he's been the green governor. But I just wonder how much effect is he taking and what kinds of stance? Because I know people are really frustrated about his very neutral stand about frack gas facilities that are being proposed in Washington. So what is your take, or what kind of pressure can be put on Inslee while he's so busy running for president as the green candidate and the climate change fighting the climate change president to take care of issues in his own state?
Well, right now, Washington leaders are actually asking the Trump administration to back off, to leave in place the rules that are currently in effect. The state has, over several years, been implementing those rules, and they're not interested in having to restart the process. So that's what they're saying. That's what they're putting out in public, in press releases. The question is, if the Trump administration, EPA, continues to move forward with implementing this rollback, will the state step in? And, whether it's multiple tribal nations across the Pacific Northwest, various, people that, sports fishers and others that consume a lot of locally caught fish, I think there's going to be a real outcry from people throughout Washington, as well as from tribal nations, demanding that state officials step in if the Trump administration fails us.
And Allie, back down in Southern Oregon, it seems that when I talked to people down there last month, that I heard kind of unanimously that people don't have much hope for the new FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, that there's not much hope for them to really come in and deny the permit as they did under the Obama administration. But that there's the hope is all being pinned on Oregon's Department of Environmental Quality and the State Lands Board. So is there any sense with the impact of the potential impact of Trump's executive order that all this work trying to convince state agencies to stop Jordan Cove might be for naught?
Definitely not. I think that this executive order just shows so clearly that The state of Oregon needs to do everything it can to protect our waterways and our communities from this project. There's like many avenues in which the state can stop this project. It's not just the Clean Water Act. There's the Coastal Zone Management Act. There's also this removal fill permit that is separate than this Clean Water Act. And all of these are state permits and state decisions that are so critical that our state steps in now and denies these as soon as possible and stops this project as soon as possible before we see more threats from the Trump administration, who's just so clearly, as Lauren said, like working for corporate special interests and not for the safety of our communities and the health of our waterways.
So when is the decision on the part of DEQ and the Department of State Lands supposed to happen?
Yeah, so that could happen anytime before September. We'll be urging those state agencies and Governor Kate Brown to make those decisions as soon as possible, because really in this age of the Trump era, like we don't have time to wait. And he's making it really clear that he wants the authority to push these pipelines through. And Governor Kate Brown needs to make it really clear that she's going to ensure that Oregon does everything it can to stop new fossil fuel projects like Jordan Cove for good.
Well, I mean, one thing to remember is that I think shortly after Trump became president, his Gary Cohn, I'm trying to think of what his role was, but he was one of Trump's chief economic advisors. And he just set his sights on Jordan Cove and said, that's going to happen. This is right after FERC had denied the permit in December 2016. So it just seemed that Jordan Cove is really really focused, laser focus on the part of the Trump administration on getting that going. So does that give us even more of a concern that they're going to do everything they possibly can to undermine whatever the state does to try to stop Jordan Cove?
I mean, we'll see. But, you know, this project is just so wild. Even when we look at the economics behind this project, on Sunday, I believe, the Oregonian released a piece on Jordan Cove because the company is actually minimizing their spending on the project by over 50%. So from, I think, about $120 million per year to $50 million per year. And a local energy analyst, Robert McCullough, actually released a report this Friday as well that Jordan Cove is at a cost disadvantage compared to its competitors. So it's 25% less at that cost disadvantage than other LNG terminals on the West Coast. So like the project that they're pushing for here in Oregon, like doesn't make sense economically. So who knows if the economic drivers are actually going to push this out before the Trump administration can do what it wants to push it forward.
Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. And today we're talking with Allie Rosenbluth, who's with Real Climate, who you just heard, and Lauren Goldberg with Columbia Riverkeeper. We're talking about the Trump administration's efforts to weaken state clean water regulations and other environmental protections. Now, in the case of Trump's executive order, was that focused specifically on clean water, or was that also focused on other, like any possible way that a state could try to stop a fossil fuel infrastructure project?
Yeah, so go ahead, Allie.
Oh, go ahead, Lauren.
Oh, no, okay. You can go ahead.
Lauren, you first and then Allie.
Fortunately, there are other levers where the state can protect clean water, can protect communities from fossil fuel infrastructure that the Trump administration was not able to reach and did not reach in this executive order. And one of the main focuses and where we're very concerned for a number of projects in the Northwest is this Clean Water Act 401 certification authority. And it's a really critical piece of the Clean Water Act where, you know, back when the law came into being, Congress recognize that sometimes the federal government isn't going to protect people in the same way that a local state would protect its local waters and protect the industries that rely on those waters, like fishing industry, drinking water supplies. And so fortunately, Congress, you know, struck this balance in the Clean Water Act where it gave states the authority to essentially veto the federal government. The federal government wants to allow a polluting project to come into a state. The state has the right to say, no, that doesn't meet our local laws, that doesn't meet our standards. And so that's one of the main pieces of state, of local authority, that's under threat with this executive order.
So how would that affect it? I mean, because I haven't read the executive order verbatim. So what is in it that, and how would it particularly work in trying to undermine, for instance, the efforts in Southern Oregon or throughout the state to stop Jordan Cove or any of the efforts that Columbia River Keepers made to stop a wide array of fossil fuel projects in the Columbia River?
Well, one of the main ways is to really restrict the amount of time that a state would have to make a decision. And these are really big, complicated decisions. Like Allie was saying, you know, with these frack gas pipelines, they'll often cross, you know, hundreds of wetlands and streams and rivers. And so one of the ways that the Trump administration is trying to thwart states' rights to protect clean water is by really cutting off their decision-making timeline. And a lot of the details are still yet to roll out. The way the executive order is structured is directing EPA to develop rules, regulations, with the direction of cut back on states' rights. And so a lot of the details we're still waiting to see.
It's just kind of strange how these people, on the one hand, they are really pro-state rights when it comes to limiting people's freedom or equality or abortion rights or anything like that. But they certainly are against state rights when it has to do with protecting the environment. Do you see that? How do you see that contradiction?
I think that's exactly right. I mean, it really goes to the structure of your show today, where here we have, you know, the Obama administration stepping in to cut off states' rights with, you know, 401 certification, and it's really about trying to get to their bottom line, which is, you know, special interests, corporate interests, the folks that that have something to gain from having these massive energy infrastructure projects in places like the Pacific Northwest that have, in, you know, over the last decade, really pushed back and tried to, you know, push a clean energy future, one that responds to the climate crisis we're in. And we have, you know, inland states that are rich in coal and frack gas and oil that want to step over that vision of our future, and they're trying to call on the federal government, the Trump administration, to accomplish their aims. And it's really up to those of us who see a different future for our children and future generations to use everything we can in our power to engage our democracy, which is at this point, really engaging our local leaders, engaging folks in Congress that, you know, can stand up to the Trump administration, so that once this administration is out of office, we aren't left with a legacy of, you know, in energy, you know, that is, you know, fossil fuel energy projects that last for 40, 50, or 60 years.
So, Allie, I wanted to get your perspective from Southern Oregon. How is this impacting you down there, and how do you see this kind of strange juxtaposition of positions on state rights? Because one of the big issues that I heard when I was down talking to people in Southern Oregon last month was the concern that this is like a foreign company, basically Pembina, who wants to build Jordan Cove, it's all in their interest, first of all, to pipe the frack gas down from British Columbia, where they're fracking it, down to Jordan Cove, and then to turn it into LNG and then sell it to China. And people are really upset about this overriding their rights as citizens, and particularly around the issue of eminent domain. So I wonder, how do you see this overall picture of this conflict around state rights and when it's invoked and when it's trampled on?
Yeah, so I think that it's been pretty clear throughout this entire administration that the priority is to push through whatever these large corporations want to see happen in our country. It is clear that the Trump administration does not prioritize protecting our communities, and it is extremely, I don't think that any of us were surprised by this action. You know, like you said, as soon as Trump stepped into office, they were talking about how excited they were for new fossil fuel projects and even mentioned Jordan Cove. So unfortunately, the way the National Gas Act already works is it already puts these corporations in front of our community members, especially in regards to eminent domain, right? Like these executive orders, before these executive orders, you know, gave the federal government the authority to condemn people's private property to build these gas pipelines, right? So it's just an extension of years and years of bad policy. I really hope that our state agencies deny these permits as soon as possible and hold on to, you know, the authority that they have. And we are just continuing to push Kate Brown just to, you know, stop toting the line on this project, right? Like, it's clear this is the Trump administration's baby, right, in Oregon, this fossil fuel export project. And, you know, if Governor Brown is a governor that's going to stand up to this unjust administration, which she has done in other ways, she needs to be doing it when it comes to fracked gas pipelines as well. She needs to be standing up against this Jordan Cove project protecting our communities from all of these things, from eminent domain, from the potential of 150,000 people's public drinking water to be impacted, from this like huge climate disaster that is going to bring the state so backwards in a time where it's trying to take the right action on climate, but really not doing it yet. So I'm not surprised this happened. I'm not surprised that the Trump administration is trying to do everything it can to protect its buddies in the fossil fuel industry. But it is the perfect time for Kate Brown to make these decisions and make it clear where Oregon stands.
Well, just to throw out another little stroke of fear on the part of both of you. I saw this headline this morning before I headed over to the station. I just pulled up the article that Trump is now proposing. He tweeted that the first 2 years of his presidency were stolen, and so he thinks he should have an extra 2 years added on to his term because the first 2 years were stolen. So I think that even though I don't know that that's too likely, I do think that there's an intransigence that we're seeing in the Trump administration that we've never seen with any president, even Nixon or Buchanan or Harding or any of the worst presidents of all times. And I just wonder what kind of preparations we need to make in the face of the fact that Trump doesn't seem to feel any obligation to follow any laws, and he'd like to just make them up himself. And I'll throw that out to you first, Lauren, because you're the lawyer here.
Yeah, so, you know, that's fascinating. I hadn't seen that headline yet. And a lot of where our focus is, you know, here on the Columbia River, communities up and down the Columbia is achieving environmental protection, public health protection, even while we have a president in office who is clearly aimed at, you know, advancing corporate interests. And we have achieved that, and we can, even with him, despite him in office. And that's because, fortunately, you know, under our system of government, there is a lot of control at the state level, even at the city government level, or sometimes at a level as relatively small as a port, like, say, the Port of Vancouver. And so we've seen these amazing case studies play out. For example, the nation's largest oil-by-rail terminal was proposed on the Columbia River. Tribal nations opposed that project. Multiple communities up and down the Columbia River and beyond opposed that project. People throughout the region stood up and said, we don't want this dangerous project in our backyard or coming through our communities in the shape of oil by rail trains that were a mile and a half long. And Washington State did the right thing, and it stopped that project. It didn't take the federal government stepping in. It didn't take an act of Congress, an act of the president. In that case, the Energy Facility Site Evaluation Council that made a recommendation to Governor Inslee to deny the project, and he listened to that government body that had held a I guess it was over a month-long trial looking at the environmental, the public health, the cultural resource impacts of that project. And so fortunately, we don't live in a dictatorship. We live in a nation where there are these multiple layers of government, and where we're trying to engage at Columbia Riverkeeper is at levels beyond just the federal government, and to continue to achieve victories for clean water and for communities that depend on, you know, the air we breathe, the water we drink, despite the Trump administration.
Well, actually, Bernie Sanders, I think, tweeted today to remind Trump that he's not a dictator, which probably he needs to get it from some other people besides Bernie Sanders. I mean, I remember how heartening it was standing in the pouring rain across the street from Vancouver City Hall about a little over a year ago, and right after Jay Inslee made the announcement that the Tesoro Savage terminal in Vancouver the plug was pulled on it, and it was right in the like sort of the heat of all this horrible stuff coming down from Washington. But my concern is, in this current state of affairs with the Trump administration, would it be possible for him or the federal government to override decisions by a state governor in the future in the case such as the Tesoro Savage oil terminal?
Fortunately, there's no sign of that threat. The company pulled the plug on that project and has packed up its briefcases and left town. You know, yes, that's always a reality, but fortunately, you know, there are a lot of pet projects and issues, and right now we're seeing with even existing fossil fuel sites, for example, the coal export terminal would have been the nation's largest coal export terminal proposed in Longview, Washington, along the Columbia River. The state of Washington denied permits for that project, including the Clean Water Act 401 certification permit. But again, fortunately, we have court systems that, you know, the coal company and the coal industry, along with states like Wyoming and Montana, that would stand to benefit from that project. You know, they've challenged the state in court, and that's playing out in our court systems. It's not just simply in the hands of the President of the United States. And so we do have some examples playing out right here in our backyard along the Columbia River, where we're really seeing the checks and balances in our government succeed.
Well, what happens if that case goes to the Supreme Court?
Well, you know, that's a great question. I can't predict how the Supreme Court would rule on that case. But we've got years of really great Supreme Court precedent on what the Clean Water Act says, what Congress put into law, and I'm really confident that decision will hold.
I'm hopeful. I mean, now that John Roberts is the swing vote of the Supreme Court, it's kind of interesting to watch. But you're listening to Locus Focus here on Cable Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. And today we're talking with Lauren Goldberg with Columbia Riverkeeper and Allie Rosenbluth with Rogue Climate about the Trump administration's efforts to weaken state clean water regulations and other environmental protections. Well, I saw Bill McKibben on Friday night speaking at Powell's Books, and it was really one of the most upbeat, optimistic moments I've had in quite a while. And I was very surprised that that came from Bill McKibben, because I just finished reading his book and it was downright depressing. But I've come back, you know, thinking about ways we can organize. And so, Allie, I want to talk about the kind of organizing that's going on in Southern Oregon and maybe how this is a reflection of what Bill McKibben is seeing happening around the country, how people are really standing up to protect our climate, to protect our planet, and to really fight strongly against fossil fuel.
Yeah, so in Southern Oregon, we've been fighting this project for nearly 15 years. Rogue Climate stepped into this fight. We were founded to fight this project and to transition our communities to clean energy. It's been a really amazing seeing the amount of public engagement in opposition to this project. So just this January, the Department of State Lands held hearings in all four counties impacted by the pipeline and terminal project. And over 3,000 people in Southern Oregon showed up to those hearings, which is huge. In cities where just a few thousand people live, there were hundreds of people in red shirts telling the state that they need to deny permits for this project for a myriad of reasons. And one thing about this project is that it really does bring our communities together. You know, if you are opposing this project because of climate or because of eminent domain or because of the love you have for the Coos Bay Estuary, you know, we are all in it together, and we are standing side by side to have these projects denied. And right now, we're actually in a really critical public comment period with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. We have public comment open to that until July 5th, and there will be some events in Portland that can help you engage on that. I don't think there are any confirmed dates yet, but you can check out our wonderful allies at Stop Frack Gas PDX for updates on when there will be a people's hearing on Jordan Cove where you can learn more about the project and also deliver your testimony that will be recorded and sent to FERC. And then you can also go to our website, our coalition website, nolngexports.org/write-comments, and get all of the comment writing materials our coalition has put together to send your comment to FERC, and also CC that comment to FERC to Governor Kate Brown, so she knows it too.
And maybe also to your state representatives and senators, because it seems like we have what, four now that I think are opposing Jordan Cove out of I don't know how many reps and senators we have in the state, and only one of our national congressional delegates is opposed to it, and that's Jeff Merkley. So I'd say that it's really important to also get your local representative on board as well.
I think there's actually a few more than four now. There's Jeff Golden, Pam Marsh, Senator Manning and Eugene, Dembro, Tanya Sanchez. And I think that's it right now.
Is Karen Power, because I heard that Karen Power, who's actually my rep, that she had also come out against it. Do you know if she actually has or she's waffling?
I think she hasn't come. I think I haven't heard anything publicly from her. So pushing her as much as possible to stand up against this project is definitely needed.
And she comes from a very strong environmental background, so she should know. And she's been a big proponent of the Clean Energy Jobs Bill. So in fact, I interviewed her just a little over a year ago about that bill, and I brought up Jordan Cove, and I watched her freeze. So I think that it's important, because I think she understands all this. It's just getting the politics in place.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
So I want to know a bit more about this, the People's Tribunal, the People's Hearing for FERC, because they're, for the last round of hearings in January, that's different. So the FERC wasn't planning on having any hearings north of Douglas County?
Yeah, so FERC will only have hearings in the communities that are directly impacted by the project. So community leaders in Portland are putting together their own hearing so that y'all have a place to submit your comments vocally, and also a place to gather and learn more about the project and take action. I think the tentative date for that is June 20th, but that is not confirmed. So if you are interested in this people's hearing, which you should be because it sounds so much fun, follow Stop Frack Gas PDX on Facebook, get on their email list, and they will let you know when it's confirmed.
And if you can send me links, then I'll put them on the Locus Focus webpage.
And there's also a sooner action that's happening. Portland Rising Tide is hosting an action against Jordan Cove in Portland on Friday, May 22nd. So the details for that are still in the mix. So they would be another organization for you to follow to find out more details on actions you can take to stop Jordan Cove in Portland.
Great. You say Friday, May 22nd? Because actually,
yes. It's
Friday. It'd be May 24th, I think.
Okay, well, it's May 22nd, so maybe I got the date wrong.
It's Wednesday. That's a Wednesday.
Sure.
Okay, great. So the other thing I'm curious is, when are the FERC hearings going to happen in Southern Oregon?
Yeah, so we don't have confirmed dates from FERC yet, but we are expecting them to be in late June. So as soon as those dates are public, we will make sure to send them out all over our lists in press releases and on our website as well, roadclimate.org.
Great. And let me know so I can come down. And I think,
yeah, I will.
Yeah, I think a lot of people actually are interested in coming down for that. So one of the things that really excites me, and I want to pull Lauren back into the conversation too, is that it seems like what used to be local struggles, and Jordan Cove for years and years was just this thing happening down in Southern Oregon, and I'm like, oh, it's really too bad, but it's probably going to happen because that's Coos Bay and they don't know any better or whatever. And the Kalama methanol refinery was seen as, well, there's this problem in Kalama and it's going to happen because they're just a tiny community and they'll just get run over by fossil fuels. But what's happened instead now is that it seems like that we have a region-wide network that's really plugged into all these proposals and understanding the connections between them. So I kind of want to hear, well, first from Lauren, because Columbia Riverkeeper seems to have been real involved in this, helping this happen. How has this network been coalesced and how can it grow even more?
Yeah, that's right. So it's the Power Past Fracked Gas Coalition, and Power Past Fracked Gas is, there's been coalition work happening for many years on fracked gas issues in the Northwest, and it's really come to a head in recent years, as you pointed out. These fossil fuel corporations are very strategic with where they choose to site their projects. They go to communities where they think they can steamroll local elected officials, the local chamber of commerce, and others to get behind their project and move it forward. And they have been unsuccessful, fortunately, in the Pacific Northwest with that strategy. So over a decade ago, this was playing out in the Columbia River estuary in communities like Warrenton and other small communities in Clatsop County. There we had the Bradwood Liquefied Natural Gas, or LNG, terminal proposed in rural Clatsop County, and we also had what was called the Oregon LNG terminal proposed in the very small community of Warrenton, Oregon, right next to Astoria. And for over a decade, people throughout Clatsop County, as well as surrounding communities in Oregon and in Washington, came together and held the line on both of those projects were multi-billion dollar proposals. They also included hundreds of miles of fracked gas pipelines. And those corporations did their best to try to wine and dine local elected officials and business owners, and they failed in that effort. Initially, they had some success, but the people pushed back. And what happened in Clatsop County was an incredible case study of how a local community coming together with other communities in the Columbia River were able to hold the line against some of the biggest fossil fuel interests in the world. And there, initially, the local Clatsop County Commission, the Board of Commissioners, they approved the gas pipeline. They had some authority, and they gave it the green light. And the people of Clatsop County were not going to have it. And they worked hard in their local elections. They flipped multiple seats on their local county commission. And when that decision was able to come back to them through some litigation the Columbia Riverkeeper brought, those local elected officials denied the pipeline. And that was the first death knell in the coffin of that LNG project. That was the Oregon LNG project. And so there's lots of fantastic examples that we have racked up in the Northwest, whether it's coal export, oil by rail, frack gas pipelines, and LNG terminals, where communities have banded together and through really sophisticated coalition work, we can push back against these multi-billion dollar fossil fuel corporate interests.
Well, another thing that came out of that was there was a lot of organizing going on in Cowlitz County in Washington around Kalama and Longview. Because there was a pipeline that was going to go through those areas, through a lot of private property owners' land as well as state land, all the way over to Warrenton. And it seems that after that pipeline was no more because the Oregon LNG and Brevard Landing were dead, the people that had been organizing against that pipeline stayed together to organize against a lot of other horrible things that were going on in that area. So do you see like there's a sort of a continuum as we fight one project that it actually just builds a movement for the very next project that's going to come along that has to be opposed?
Yeah, that's exactly right. These fossil fuel companies don't realize the incredible community energy that they are spurring, how people are building lifelong friendships as they're coming together to fight for a clean energy future, to fight for their clean water, to fight for their right and, to take their grandkids out on the Columbia and catch salmon without having massive LNG tankers pushing them off the river. And so it really is throughout all of these communities in Oregon, in Washington, we're seeing incredible community building, people coming together and having fun. And Allie can speak to that more. I mean, you go to some of these rallies and these, and go to these victory parties and experience the incredible friendships and community energy that comes together to stand up for local values people care about and for a different vision of our future than what these fossil fuel interests have to offer.
Well, speaking of having fun, on May 18th, which happens to be the 39th anniversary of the eruption of Mount St. Helens, there's going to be a big gathering at Camp Kalama, which is on the mouth of the Kalama River, right at its confluence with the Columbia River. And it's a big event to stop the methanol refinery that they want to build in Kalama, which would be just due west of the camp. And what's interesting, I wondered about the date, why they were setting May 18th, and I found out from Dan Sears that, in fact, it's because the plume of smoke that would arise from that methanol refinery would be just as high as the plume of ash that erupted at Mount St. Helens on May 18th, 1980. So it'd be a great opportunity to meet a lot of great people who live in the Kalama, Longview, Kelso area, hang out along the Kalama River, and protest this methanol refinery. And I'll be doing more about it next week. We're going to actually have some activists from Kalama on the show to talk about this event. So this is, I guess, another example. Talk about, Allie, what's going on down your way in which people have, like, in fact, what I find fascinating is the strange bedfellows that have been made in the fight against Jordan Cove.
Yeah, no, we have a lot of interesting characters in the mix, and they're all now some of my favorite people and feel like family. So it's really been a incredible way to build community, you know, by joining up against this fight. And our communities are working really hard, and there's a lot of fatigue that comes with fighting a project for nearly 15 years. But, you know, this, you know, coalition building that we've been able to do with Columbia Riverkeeper and other folks all across the state and Northern California has, like, re-energized those folks who have been dealing with this for nearly a decade and for over a decade. And so just every moment that there is an opportunity to speak out against Jordan Cove, we're there, and we're not just there doing it powerfully, we're also there having fun.
Well, actually, and I was down interviewing people about Jordan Cove at the end of March, and I happened to be in town in Coos Bay for a it was a Coos County Planning Commission or a Coos Bay Planning Commission meeting about giving basically an exemption to the Oregon state land use laws so that they could dredge the harbor. And it was a very strange event, and I can't go into all the details now, but what I really saw there, with an event that had only about a few days' notice, the place was packed. It was a very small room, but there were like about 30 people there, which was a good size for very short notice. And the energy really blew my mind. It was so clear that these people have been fighting this for so long, and they had this coalition that was just amazing. And at one point, one of the community activists, one of the landowners whose property is on the alternate roof of the pipeline, was, as people were just yelling at this lawyer from Pembina, who is the company that owns Jordan Cove, and just calling him out on all the lies that he was saying, this guy stands up and he says, "Everybody who's opposed, stand up." And the entire room stood up. And I thought, this is like, goes beyond any of the energy that I've seen in north here, you know, in northern Oregon and in Washington around stuff. And it really shows what 15 years of fighting does to a community.
Yeah. And there's misinformation, I think, in northern Oregon, especially about the Jordan Cove project. You know, every time I meet with Portland legislators, I heard this from Tina Kotek just a few months ago. They all think that community wants to see this project go through, right? And that is so not true. Like, you saw it there yourself. Like, Coos County has some of the strongest advocates against this project. And there are just a small few that the company has in their pockets that are speaking in favor of this project. So I always, always tell legislators or folks who think that, you know, this project is what the Coos Bay community wants to actually go down there and meet those people and ask them what they care about, because it's the estuary. It's the jobs that folks rely on for fishing and clamming and crabbing. It's their ability to go and use the North Spit. It is that beautiful, beautiful area. It is not to be used for an LNG terminal. And it's just so clear when you're down there that those feelings persist.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. And today we're talking with Ellie Rosenbluth, who's with Rogue Climate down in, I guess you're in Phoenix, right? Phoenix, Oregon. And Lauren Goldberg with Columbia Riverkeeper out in Hood River. And we're talking about ways to fight back against Trump's efforts to weaken our state's ability to protect us from fossil fuel projects. You were talking about misinformation. I think that some of the worst misinformation is coming out on the part of these companies that are proposing these projects. I don't know if you saw this, Ellie, but when I was down in North Bend 6 weeks ago, Larry Magnin, who's one of the landowners, had spread out on his kitchen counter this full-page ad that was in the Coos Bay paper put out by Pembina, thanking everybody, I guess it was the 3,000 people who showed up for all the hearings and thanking the environmentalists and the tribes and everybody who came out and supported Pembina. And we're looking at that and going, what are you talking about? So I think it's kind of interesting to see how Pembina, in their desperation, was trying to include everybody who opposed them. It's just, you know, the fact that they showed up at a hearing, is that that's supposed to be showing support for Pembina.
Yeah, and I really loved that because they used direct language from a press release that I wrote. So you can see that they're just trying to use our tactics, right? They're trying to turn our words against us, but the community's not buying it. And it's just such a joke. They put out a full page ad for Earth Day that was about how they were going to bring salmon back to the area, which is just such a joke because we know that this project would have immense impacts on our waterways. It would warm our rivers by removing shade. It would, could potentially pollute it with frack outs. The dredging would just, you know, really, really mess with the water quality. None of that is good for salmon. But they're running these ads on Earth Day talking about how they are so excited to bring salmon back to to Southern Oregon, which is just ridiculous.
Well, I have a question for the lawyer and I missed today, Lauren. One of the things that's so alarming, and that's what I thought when I saw that ad that Pembina had put out in the Coos Bay paper, is that lying seems to be just so acceptable now on the part of these people that are trying to change, to transform our region into an area we would not recognize anymore, basically just a fossil fuel hub. How do we counteract those lies? And how do we, what can we do both legally and ethically, whatever, to make it unacceptable anymore for people to lie the way they have been, and the way that Trump, you know, he passed his 10,000 lie mark last week. I mean, what can we do to really change the tenor of the conversation in this community and in the country?
Civic engagement. People need to get involved in their community. The way that can happen is, you know, go to a public forum, go to a hearing, listen to your neighbors, listen to various perspectives. You know, go online. A lot of this information is out there. You can go on these corporations' websites and see their shiny stock photos, and then visit a website like Power Pass Frack Gas or Columbia Riverkeeper, any of the various nonprofit organizations that are fighting these fossil fuel giants. I'm a huge fan of letters to the editor. It's incredible to see the you know, the overflowing number of letters to the editor that have been pouring into papers in recent months in response to the frack gas industry and the story the frack gas industry and their PR firms are trying to tell the public, trying to sell the Pacific Northwest, which is so threatened by climate change, about how their frack gas projects are actually clean energy. You know, the public can see through that. And if you feel like your local paper or isn't reporting the way that you think that they should, write a letter to the editor. And we're seeing people do that. So there's so many ways right now for people to get information. And I would just encourage people to, you know, to get online, go to these forums, talk to your neighbors. Don't just resort to listening to the fossil fuel giants' political spin. Use all the resources out there, and what we're seeing time and again is people are coming to a very different conclusion than the line that the fossil fuel giants are peddling. People who are being offered money to have a frack gas pipeline in their backyard are saying no because they see the bigger picture and the real risks that come with having the fossil fuel industry take further seed in the Northwest.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about some of the landowners in Southern Oregon who are having this pipeline, Pacific Connector Pipeline, go through their property, and what they, how many of them have signed on now with Pembina, and how many of them are resisting, and what is helping those who, and why are people selling out, and some people selling out, and why are other people so firm in their opposition?
Yeah, so I can't speak on behalf of landowners and, you know, why people are resisting or not resisting selling easements. I do know that 40% of landowners have not signed easements with the company, and that there is a huge chunk of those landowners who will never sign easements with the company. And the company knows that this project can't be built without the use of eminent domain, and they are trying to spin it that they are going to have all voluntary agreements on this pipeline route, but that is absolutely not possible. So landowners are coming together to support each other in resisting this project, but it's hard. Again, it's been almost 15 years of this company coming to your door and asking you to give up something that you love. So, they will continue to resist, I'm sure, and I'm really grateful for all of the wonderful people that have been brought in my life through this project, including the landowners.
Well, I actually, and you probably have had these experiences too, visiting some of the landowners. There's one woman, Stacey McLaughlin, who's out just outside of Roseburg, and in order to get to her property, she lives way, way off the road, but she told me I needed to give her a call when I got to this gate, and then she'd come down and unlock the gate so I could come up. And the gate is, I don't know, it seems like a mile from her house. So she came down, we met, and then she explained to me as I was talking to her later about the reason why that gate is there is because people from Jordan Cove, had surveyors and other types, had been coming on her property without any permission and looking around and trying to do surveys. And she told them verbally many times to get off, and she finally had to put a locked gate up to keep them out. And I've heard that story over and over again from people either directly or from secondhand, thirdhand reports. So this is, I think that people up here maybe don't get a sense of just how violated these people are and what they're living with. So let's just talk a little bit about what it's like to have this uncertainty. It's more than uncertainty hanging over your head about a piece of land. A lot of these people have retired there. Everybody refers to it as their piece of paradise. So when you talk to people, what sense do you get about what they're in for, what the stake is, and just how freaked out the whole thing makes them?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on who you're talking with, but, you know, people who live in Southern Oregon love this place. Like, it is exceptionally beautiful. People here are down to earth and fun, and, you know, this pipeline for so many of those landowners, you know, really would have devastating impacts. You know, fracked gas pipelines are, you know, when they leak, they explode. And I know folks who this pipeline would just be a few feet from their kitchen window. The pipeline would require a 95-foot permanent clear cut, right? And so folks like Stacy, who worked really hard on rehabilitating property, a lot of that would go to waste. So, you know, folks who I know are standing strong, and I'm sure another time would be really happy to talk with you on the show, Barbara, if you want perspective from landowners, because again, like, I'm not an impacted landowner. I'm a community organizer. I get to work with all these people, and I'm really lucky to do it, but I don't speak for them.
Right. They speak a lot about you, actually, and they love you. So I heard that.
I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, it's another sense of I got this amazing community that's being built across four counties and across a wide diversity of people. So it was really inspiring. Well, in our last few moments, first of all, Lauren, can you just let us know things that people can do in the very near future that can help to stand up against the Trump administration's attempt to take over our environment here in the Northwest?
Get engaged in whatever local fight inspires you. There's a lot going on right now, and there, you know, often with these different fossil fuel fights, there will be really critical public engagement opportunities where we need to turn thousands of people out to public hearings to stand up to the fossil fuel industry. Go on Power Pass Frack Gas, go on Columbia River Keeper's website, sign up for what we call action alerts. That way you can find out, we'll email you And you can find out when the latest public hearing is coming up, when there's an opportunity in your hometown to talk to your local elected officials about the issues that you care about. And as you mentioned, Barbara, there's a great event coming up on May 18th in Kalama, Washington, where the community is coming together and is inviting other people in to really show the governor of Washington and Washington's elected officials that the town of Kalama, Washington, Columbia River communities do not want to have the largest frack gas to methanol refinery in the world in their backyard. And so it's a great event to go to. Hopefully it'll be as beautiful as it is this week. So that's a great way to show your support to people, the kind of people that Aldi are talking about who've been dealing with these fossil fuel projects in their backyard for many years.
So, Ali and Lauren, it's really great to talk with both of you, and we'll stay in touch about upcoming events. And just let me know, and we'll spread the word here on KBOO.
Yeah, thank you so much, Barbara. And definitely to all your listeners, please follow Rogue Climate and No LNG Exports. I have a feeling some good news will be coming soon, so give us a follow.
I will put the links on the website. Thanks a lot. Today we've been talking with Lauren Goldberg with Columbia Riverkeeper and Ali Rosenbluth with Rogue Climate, and you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed or you want your friends or family to hear the show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. Next week, we'll talk with another Columbia Riverkeeper staff person, Dan Sears, an activist from Kalama, Washington, who are fighting the world's largest methanol refinery proposed for Kalama. My engineer is Patsy Kohlberg. I'm Barbara Bernstein. We're going to go out with some music by Ricky Lee Jones. Thanks for listening.
He's an ugly man. He always was an ugly man. He grew up to be like him. And he'll tell you lies. Look at you and tell you lies. You grew up to be like his father, ugly inside.